Searchlights pierce a starry night sky, sweeping the clouds and illuminating an edifice in the form of the words, 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox, a News Corporation company. Stars drift slowly in the blackness of space. 20th Century Fox presents. In association with Dune Entertainment 3 LLC. A three arts entertainment production. With Keanu Reeves, the moon glows silver in the darkness. Jennifer Connelly. Seen from the mountainous surface of the Earth, letters form around the moon. The day the Earth stood still. A circle of reflected sunlight and the Earth form the two O's. In 1928, a blizzard lashes the Karakoram Mountains in India. In a tent, a candle glows in a lantern, and a cup of snow is placed on a gas burner. Jaden Smith. Climbing spikes are sharpened. John Cleese. Wind tears at the canvas walls of the tent. A light shines outside, then goes dark. A bearded climber looks puzzled. He emerges from the tent in thick furs with a climbing axe and a rope wrapped around him. John Hamm. He pulls on goggles to protect his eyes. Beams of light radiate skywards from behind a rocky ridge. Kyle Chandler. And Kathy Bates. The climber carefully ascends a snowy slope. Robert Knepper, James Hong, John Rothman. Casting by Mindy Marin, CSA, Corinne Mayers, CSA, and Heike Brandstatter, CSA. The climber inches up a near vertical cliff. Costume designer, Tish Monahan. He plunges his ice axe into the rock and hauls himself up over the edge of the rock face. Music by Tyler Bates. He stands slowly upright. Visual effects by Jeffrey A. Oaken. He moves forward as the wind howls around him. Edited by Wayne Warman, ACE. He moves on, steadying himself with the ice axe. Production designer, David Brisbin. Director of photography, David Tattersall, BSc. The climber raises his goggles and stares at a glowing ball embedded in the snowy rock. Lights pulse inside the orb as he approaches. He closes on the object, which is about 10 feet high. Its surface is crystalline, with shadows and light swirling inside. He reaches out and lays a mittened hand on the orb. He slowly runs his hand over the surface, eyes narrowed above his snow-crusted dark beard. He raises the ice axe. Light shines out as he breaks the crystalline crust, and he squints at the intensity of the swirling brilliance within. He's enveloped in a brilliant light of overwhelming intensity. The ice axe lies on the snow, produced by Erwin Stoff. The climber lies next to it, his eyes closed. Produced by Gregory Goodman and Paul Harris Boardman. He awakens and rises slowly. Based on the screenplay by Edmund H. North, he sits up and looks around. There is a spherical hole in the snowy rock face. But the orb has gone. Screenplay by David Scarpa. The climber looks at his right hand. The mitten has a hole in it. He removes it, revealing a round, coin-sized scar on the back of his hand. He frowns and checks his palm, too. He sits on the snow-covered rocky ground and looks skywards through the swirling snow. directed by Scott Derrickson. Objects seen through an electron microscope appear on a screen at Princeton University, present day.
Thiobacillus, which... William, is a remarkable bacterium because...
It's the only known organism that lives in sulfuric acid.
That's right, and... Yes, Mr. Ronnie?
Deinococcus radiodurans, first discovered in 1956, breeding inside drums of radioactive waste.
That's correct. So, Pompajana, Thiobacillus, Deinococcus, which of these three would most likely survive in the extreme environment of the Jupiter moon Callisto, and why? Tom, can you get the lights, please? That's your lab report question for this week, and it's due in my box by midnight on Friday. That's all for today. Thank you.
The tutor is slim, with dark hair tied in a ponytail.
So... Are you coming to the faculty conference tonight?
Wasn't a dean's staff lecture about how the universe is like a beautiful woman?
I think I'll pass.
Come on. It'll be fun. I could pick you up.
She smiles hesitantly.
Can't. I have to get back to my own extreme environment. But thank you.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Cars stream across an arched iron bridge over a river. The tutor drives a small silver hatchback. A computer game character has a sword across his back.
God, go.
Jacob?
Go, go.
Jacob's got long, dark, curly hair.
Come on, come on.
Yes. Jacob, dinner.
The tutor, his guardian, is white. Jacob is black. She crosses to the bed where he's concentrating on the game and sits beside him.
You finished your homework?
Yes, you just killed me.
Good. Now that you're dead, you can shut that off and come down for dinner.
Did you order pepperoni tonight?
Nope. Are these clean?
Yeah.
We've had pizza twice this week, so I made you a proper meal tonight. With vegetables.
Vegetables? Ew. Stop being such a stepmom.
She spots a razor and a shaving brush.
Where'd you get this?
It was Dad's.
Oh, no. Where was it?
I found it in the downstairs bathroom. It's mine now.
He looks at her defiantly.
Okay, come on, I said please shut that off.
He didn't say please.
Jacob?
Helen.
She sighs and, carrying a washing basket, runs downstairs.
Hello?
Helen Benson?
Yes?
Dr. Helen Benson? You're at 106 Longwood Road?
Who is this?
Someone should be there shortly.
What do you mean someone's coming here? Who is this?
Everything will be explained to you en route.
En route where? Hello?
They should be there soon. Yes, they're at your door now.
Hold on a minute.
Red and blue lights flash outside as she crosses to the front door.
Dr. Benson, if you'll come with us.
What's happening?
Everything will be explained, but you must come with us right away.
Am I under arrest?
You're in federal custody.
Why? What is this about?
Everything will be explained en route.
I have a child here.
Is there anyone who can look after the boy?
No.
Can his father take care of him?
No, his father isn't here.
I can take care of myself.
Jacob, you can't take care of yourself. There's just no way.
You're coming with us, Dr. Benson.
Helen?
A blonde woman in a blue top is standing among the group of police officers. Helen looks shocked.
Jacob, grab your coat. You're going to stay at Isabel's.
Motorcycle outriders prepare to escort the waiting car.
It's going to be okay.
Dr. Benson, there isn't much time.
A stern-faced woman with dark hair sits in the front seat.
Okay, we've got him. Let's go.
The blonde woman puts her arms protectively around the bemused Jacob as the convoy of two cars and four motorcycles pulls away. Lights flashing, they speed down rain-soaked streets.
Stoplights down, then left. There's an on-ramp for the highway. Do you see it?
This must be a mistake.
Helen Benson, social security number 51487843?
Yeah.
It's no mistake.
What is this about?
Everything will be explained.
Stop the car. Can you stop the car, please?
Ma'am.
I am not under arrest. You can't do this.
This is a matter of national security. You're just gonna...
National security? Well, that just means whatever you want it to mean. I'm just asking you to tell me why I'm needed or to let me go.
Ma'am, I can't tell you why you're needed because I don't know. But I know they need you and I know it's urgent.
How do you know that?
He points to the road ahead. Beyond the outriders, their side of the highway is empty.
Where are all the cars?
They shut down the highway.
They shut it down? For what?
For us.
She stares at the expressionless agent, who stares straight ahead, ignoring her. More vehicles join the convoy, rolling down the empty nighttime highway. Military vehicles and personnel maneuver as gates open to admit them. A Chinook helicopter stands outside a large hangar. The convoy pulls up at an aircraft with its loading ramp down. The agent ushers the stunned Helen towards the helicopter. Inside, it's packed with soldiers and some civilians. Helen finds a space and sits down nervously. She looks across at a man with a dark, bushy beard.
Hi, I'm Yusuf.
Helen.
Helen, do you have any idea why this is happening to us?
No.
Well, think. You know, what do we have in common?
What do you do for a living, Yusuf?
I'm a nuclear physicist.
I'm an astronomer.
I'm a geologist.
I'm an astrobiologist.
Fossil record study.
No, microbiology. Theories of life beyond Earth.
All right, so we're all scientists.
No, not me. I'm a civil engineer.
You put it all together, what do you get?
I participated in government mobilizations like this before, war games and preparations for certain scenarios.
Is that what you think this is?
No. Whatever it is, it's not a game.
Twin-rotor helicopter lifts off into the dark night sky. Floodlights illuminate a sports field teeming with equipment and personnel. The chopper lands midfield. A title reads, Fort Linwood Military Academy, New Jersey. A soldier carries a heavy machine gun on his shoulder. As police cars escort more vehicles through the military throng, soldiers push racks of protective clothing along a walkway.
Directly across the courtyard to the main barracks. Leave all your cell phones and cameras here. I repeat, cell phones and cameras are not allowed inside. Leave any cell phones and cameras here.
Helen. Can we bring her up?
Ladies and gentlemen, you need to give up your cell phones.
Your attention, please. Make your way directly across the courtyard to the main barracks.
Helen.
Oh, Michael.
Been a long time.
Are you behind us?
Yes. Glad you came.
Not really had a choice.
Sorry about that. I had you put on the vital list. I thought it was important to have you part of this team.
Why?
Keeping up with the work you've been doing, Professor Barnhart.
What does it have to do with this?
I'll have to crash brief you in the conference room.
The NASA Space Agency logo adorns the screen in a large lecture theater.
Object 07/493 was first spotted just beyond Jupiter's orbit by the Space Guard program.
It was notable for the fact that it was not moving in an asteroidal ellipse, but rather it had a hyperbolic orbit and was shooting through our solar system. The object was moving at speeds of up to 3 × 10⁷ meters per second. At first, it was projected to pass millions of miles outside of Earth's orbit. However, we soon discovered that the object was not following a gravitationally free fall trajectory. And as such, its path was recalculated.
It's on a collision course with the Earth.
It was at this time the crisis response team was activated and everything you see around you was set in motion.
Graphics show impact location, Manhattan. Helen stares.
Can we launch a missile to intercept it?
The military is attempting to do just that. In fact, they may launch several. But given the speed at which this object is moving, our chances of success are slim at best.
Why don't they evacuate the area?
We simply do not have enough time. The affected area contains some 8 million inhabitants. Aftermath.
How long do we have?
The screen shows 1 hour, 18 minutes, 43 seconds.
78 minutes.
The time is counting down.
Hey, what did the cops want anyway?
Well, there's gonna be a big storm tonight. And they needed some scientists to help out. You know, planning stuff. So, pretty soon you're all gonna go down to the basement, okay? I already told Isabel.
I haven't seen anything on TV about...
Jacob, just do it, all right?
All right. I should go.
Wait, can we talk just a little bit longer?
We're having dinner now. I really should go.
You know, I love you very much.
Okay. Bye, Helen.
She tentatively opens the toilet cubicle door.
Is that a cell phone?
She looks nervously at the woman in military uniform and nods.
Can I borrow it?
Choppers hurtle towards the bright lights of Manhattan.
What are the odds of an asteroid making impact in Manhattan?
Astronomical. Plus, there's no light signal.
Then it can't be an asteroid.
A primordial black hole, perhaps.
What? You know what that would mean?
Look, whatever it is, if this object is moving at 3 times 10 to the 7th meters per second, there will be no aftermath. If they can't stop it before it hits, there will be nothing left but dust. It will sterilize the air. This is all theater.
They're saying we lost launch capability.
What? Capability? Oh.
How is that even possible?
What does that mean?
The missile's disabled.
Disabled by what?
They don't know.
But they can restore it, right? There's a fallback. They have to launch.
Helen looks shocked and stares out of the window of the chopper at the city lights.
Object impact in 7.
Our Father, who
6.
Are
in heaven, 5. Come, 4. Earth, 3. Give us 2. Earth. 1.
Helen and Yusuf hold hands as the scientists brace themselves. Helen opens her eyes.
Where is it?
Could they have made a mistake?
Wait!
Roger that. They're saying the object's still in its approach.
Well, then where is it?
It's slowing down.
Awesome. It's slowed down.
I see it.
The scientists rush to look out of the window. A bright ball of light is moving through the dark sky above the illuminated city. It passes behind the towering Empire State Building. Illuminates the Gothic facade of St. Patrick's Cathedral and moves with swirling brilliance towards Central Park. Trees cast eerie shadows across the grass as people gather and stare up in awe. Helen stares out of the chopper window as the object sinks towards the ground. Powerful blasts of energy slow its descent, generating clouds of billowing vapor. The watching crowds are silhouetted in its intense light. Draft from the object's descent causes a tsunami of wind and vapor which blasts out, raising clouds of leaves and knocking people off their feet. A child's buggy is blown away and a park bench is ripped from its mountings. An Apache attack helicopter heads into the cloud. The scientist's chopper lands in the park. Soldiers file out, weapons raised, torches blazing. The scientists follow, wearing hazmat protective suits, with glass-fronted helmets covering their heads. They move cautiously through the trees, towards the glowing, vapor-shrouded object. Torches mounted on rifles cut shafts of light through the dense gloom. Helen advances with the others through the mist. The object casts an eerie green glow in the haze.
Radiation levels are slightly elevated, but it's not dangerous.
I'm getting a lot of electrostatic interference.
Yeah, me too. Did you feel that?
Feel what?
I feel it.
She stands still, concentrating.
It's close.
Lights swirl in the fog, cutting brightly through the dissipating mists. The object is like the orb on the mountainside many years before, but much bigger. The gathered crowd stare up at the pulsating sphere, which is hundreds of feet high. Helen gapes with her mouth open behind her visor as an intense beam of white light sweeps across the crowd. She looks around in alarm as the military arrive in Hummers with heavy machine guns and police vehicles draw up in convoy. The soldiers fan out to firing positions.
Checkmate.
06, who is Tactical Command?
1056, this is 2917. I need to know who has jurisdiction on this site.
A soldier arms his 50 caliber heavy machine gun and points it at the sphere. Floodlights illuminate the site and police snipers take positions overlooking the park. The Apache circles the sphere as lights blaze out from the interior, then concentrate at the base of the towering object. The power is so intense, Helen has to look away and raises an arm to shield her eyes. Police and soldiers stand tensely with their weapons raised. A figure moves in the white blaze of light. Helen moves towards the hazy figure. As the soldiers prepare to fire, Helen keeps moving slowly forwards. She and the figure approach one another near the base of the sphere. She hesitates. Then the figure holds out a human-like hand. Helen goes to take it. Red blood sprays Helen's visor.
Cease fire!
All stations, cease fire!
Don't shoot! Do not shoot!
The figure falls into Helen's arms, and she looks down at the humanoid shape with a featureless face.
We need a medic!
Personnel hurry to help. More lights blaze within the sphere, and everybody looks up, staring in awe. A humanoid robot some 50 feet high emerges from the sphere. A light shines out from an eye slit in its head. Every weapon becomes inoperative, and all the lights go out. People cringe and fall to the ground in pain at the power of the noise emitted by the robot. It strides forward and looms over Helen, who's still holding the wounded visitor. The robot tilts its head down towards her and stretches out a vast hand. The robot withdraws its hand, raises its head, and stands with its arms by its sides. The light in the eye slit goes out. All the lights, power, and weapon systems are restored. Stunned people pick themselves up off the ground. The vast, metallic-skinned robot stands immobile, the sphere swirling in light and vapor behind it. The visitor's body is rushed to a medical facility. It's on a covered gurney. Helen is with it.
No one else.
A sarcophagus-like gurney is wheeled to a prefab hut in a hangar. The protective cover is unsealed.
Do I start an IV?
No. We don't know its physiology. For all we know, the fluids may kill it.
What do I do then? What do I do?
Well, its blood is red. It must have hemoglobin.
Okay, she's right. Start the drip.
Okay, I can't find a vein. It doesn't have any veins.
Look for a central line site then.
It's going into cardiac arrest.
D-fib? Yeah, get in there.
D-fib
now.
Go.
Fire!
Monitor, short it out.
Heart rate is stabilizing. It's stabilizing.
What now?
Mike looks baffled.
Do you have a surgeon?
She glances at Mike.
Normally for a gunshot, we'd be using a general anesthetic. But as we don't know how the patient will react, I have opted for a local. I'm making the first incision now.
His scalpel cuts into the patient's gray, gelatinous skin.
No explosions. So far, so good. Pale flesh, a texture, something akin to, what, whale blubber. I'm taking a specimen now.
Let's pack that on ice and chop her to a genomics lab for DNA mapping.
I'd like a sample of that as well.
I am entering the wound, and I God. What is this? I'm sorry. I'm a little taken aback.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. That's the thing. It's all so familiar. The outer layer of the flesh is exotic. It's strange, but as I go deeper, as muscle, vein, nerve, bone, I'm extracting the bullet.
The gray skin is coming apart as the surgeon drops the bullet into a sample tube.
This gray flesh, it seems to be just falling away. It's removing itself. I think I need to keep extracting it.
Yes, continue.
Can you explain any of this?
Dumbfounded, Helen slowly shakes her head. The surgeon, wearing a suit which even covers his feet, drops lumps of blubbery flesh into a basin. On the operating table, the naked, slime-covered body of a man curls up into a fetal position as Mike and Helen stare in disbelief. The patient lies under a protective tent, attended by a technician. Helen enters the room. She descends 3 steps from the gallery area where she was watching and cautiously approaches the tent. She peers in and sees the man's eyes fluttering.
It's dreaming. Any signs of neural activity?
He lit up the fMRI like Times Square.
Get help!
Cold white subject is conscious.
Help!
The patient is thrashing around inside the tent. Mike comes in and checks a monitor.
It's looking at you. Try saying something to it.
My name is Dr. Helen Benson. We're trying to help you. You have nothing to fear from us.
Help you? Nothing to fear.
Global markets are panicked in early trading this morning in response to the crisis in Central Park. Trading has been halted on the New York Stock Exchange, the Nikkei, and the Hang Seng as Manhattan prepares for a massive evacuation. In other cities around the world, people are voluntarily evacuating population centers, fearing that the sphere in Central Park may be the vanguard of an impending alien.
The president and the vice president have been taken to separate and secure locations. Until this situation has some kind of resolve, I am the eyes and the ears of the presidency. So, what do we know?
Madam Secretary, we lost contact with one of our DSCS-3 listening satellites orbiting Earth.
What is that image?
You're saying that the sphere in Central Park isn't the only one?
In fact, we have intelligence that small spheres have landed at other locations around the world.
There have been sightings. Briefings on that in general. Where exactly are these spheres
right now?
How's that
even possible?
I think we're asking the wrong questions.
What questions should we be asking?
Well, let's start with this. Where is our satellite?
We lost contact with it.
In the scheme of things, the loss of one satellite isn't necessarily our concern.
DSCS-3 stands for Defense Systems Communications Satellite. Remember what it communicates with? They were able to access our defense mainframe via that satellite. That's how they temporarily shut down our missile defenses and entered our airspace.
We have changed all the codes.
And on top of that, there is a vast amount of vital intelligence on that mainframe. They know everything about us now.
We know nothing about them.
Almost nothing. The fact that they chose to disable our defenses tells us something about their intentions.
The secretary's chopper touches down at Fort Linwood.
Madam Secretary, we brought in several specialists to analyze the tissue samples we harvested from the being. This is our chief geneticist, Dr. Hideo Ikegawa. This is our chief astrobiologist, Dr. Helen Benson.
Hello.
Doctor?
The being is in a nascent state. The DNA samples we've taken seem to represent 3 distinct life forms.
3 different DNA types?
Yes, including the being's brain. The body tissue is human, as far as we can tell. The gray flesh encasing it is organic material, some kind of bioengineered spacesuit. What it resembles, oddly enough, is placental tissue.
Which makes sense, given that placenta is a life support system, and that basically, in order to survive in our environment, the being had to be born here, in its human form. They must have come here in the past and obtained a DNA sample from a human subject. Now, since that birth, the being has grown exponentially. This is 1 hour after surgery. 3 hours. 6 hours.
How much can you tell us about it by decoding its DNA?
Oh, you don't understand. These are the Dead Sea Scrolls. Geneticists are going to be studying this code for generations.
No, they aren't. This code is the property of the U.S. government. Its very existence is classified. I want to see it.
The being is lying on a gurney wearing grey hospital pajamas and an oxygen mask. The officials stand at a window overlooking the room.
Water. Bring him up.
Does it actually speak our language? Or does it just parrot what it's heard?
No, it seems to already understand our language.
They've compromised our satellites. They know everything about us.
Mr. Driscoll.
Watched closely by Helen, Mike removes the oxygen mask and offers the being a cup of water. He takes it and draws it shakily towards him. They all watch him intently. The secretary takes a step towards him. He uses both hands to steady the plastic beaker.
My name is Regina Jackson. I'm the Secretary of Defense of the United States of America.
This body will take some getting used to.
They all stare. Regina glances at the scientists.
I've been sent here to determine who or what you represent and what your intentions are.
It feels unreal to me. Alien.
Helen steps forward to help him put down the cup.
It will take time to adapt.
What were you before you were human?
He looks just like the climber from 1928.
Different.
Different how?
It would only frighten you.
Do you have a name?
Klaatu.
Do you represent a civilization?
I represent a group of civilizations.
Where is this group of civilizations?
All around you.
What is your purpose in coming here?
There is a gathering of world leaders not far from here. I will explain my purpose to them.
I'm afraid that's not possible. Perhaps you should explain yourself to me instead.
Do you speak for the entire human race?
I speak for the President of the United States. Now please, tell me, why have you come to our planet?
His head swivels towards her.
Your planet?
Yes. This is our planet.
No, it is not.
We've decided to sedate him and move him to a more secure location.
Are you going to interrogate him?
That's a possibility.
Madam Secretary, as scientists, we can't consent to this.
He says he wants to speak to the UN.
History has lessons to teach us about first encounters between civilizations. As a rule, the less advanced civilization is either exterminated or enslaved. I'm thinking of Pizarro and the Incas, Columbus and the Native Americans, and the list goes on. Unfortunately, in this case, the less advanced civilization is us.
This is representative of an extraterrestrial civilization. This is the most important discovery in the history of mankind.
It may well be the last discovery in the history of mankind. We need to know what they're planning, and we need to know now.
So you want to drug him? Interrogate him? I'm sorry, we won't do that. You understand?
I understand completely. Of course, if you won't do it, we'll have to call in someone who will.
Well, I'm sure you can find someone who will. However,
I'll do it.
Helen.
I'll do it.
She enters a storeroom with shelves full of vials of drugs. She leans back against the door and composes herself, then takes a hypodermic in a sealed packet from a glass cabinet. She puts it in her pocket, then scans the shelves. She picks up a vial marked H2O, saline solution.
That won't be necessary, Doctor. We've already prepared the solution for you.
The agent hands her a vial.
I just need a syringe.
She pockets a vial of saline solution, goes to the syringe cabinet and opens, then closes the door. She turns and holds up the syringe packet for the benefit of the suspicious agent.
I want to apologize to you. Seems we got off to a bad start.
It seems we did.
We're going to transport you to a different facility for better medical care.
No, you are not.
Excuse me?
I am leaving.
I can't allow you to do that.
It is not up to you.
This is a military installation. You're surrounded by hundreds of soldiers. There's no leaving here.
I have done nothing wrong.
You invaded our airspace. That automaton that emerged from the sphere, it attacked our troops.
It acted to defend me. It activates in the presence of violence.
Dr. Benson, please.
Jaw thrust forward, Regina eyeballs Klaatu. Having swapped the two vials, Helen approaches him. She rolls up his sleeve and jabs the hypodermic into his arm. The defense secretary watches dispassionately, then turns away.
Run.
His dark eyes stare at Helen.
It's done.
You'll come with us, ma'am.
Three military policemen surround Helen and escort her from the room. Klaatu glances down at his arm as the agent from the drugstore comes in. They eyeball one another. Helen and her escort walk past two agents pushing an empty wheelchair towards Klaatu's room.
Keep moving, please.
Lift doors slide open. Inside is Klaatu in the wheelchair with four agents. Manacled to the chair, he's pushed down a passageway with pipes lining one wall. He's pushed into a room. The agent bringing up the rear checks the passageway before entering and closing the door. The room is large, with a man in glasses sitting at a table covered with electronic equipment. He's pushed up to the table. Electrodes are placed around his body and attached to his temples. The operator activates the polygraph. The agents leave the room. Outside, they join others standing guard at regular intervals along the walls of the corridor.
I'm going to ask you a series of control questions.
The man studies his equipment.
Are you currently in a seated position?
Yes.
Are you human?
My body is.
Do you feel pain?
My body does.
The operator stares at the electronic traces on his screen, which flickers.
Are you aware of an impending attack on the planet Earth?
Klaatu turns to look at the man.
You should let me go.
The polygraph operator stares fixedly at his screen through glasses perched on the end of his nose.
I'll repeat the question.
His screen blurs and distorts. Needles trace wave patterns on scrolling graph paper. Klaatu eyes the interrogator steadily. The man returns his stare with a frown, then reaches out to his console. The man's thrown backwards by the charge. Half lying under the table, he twitches, then slowly slides back upright, staring blankly.
What gate did you use to enter this base?
East loading door.
How do I get there?
100 yards left from the back of this building.
Is there a security code?
44 Bravo, 30.
What size is that suit?
42 long.
Take it off.
Klaatu focuses his vision down the electrode cables, through the building's wiring to a security camera overlooking an agent standing guard. He then channels through to another camera and another guard. Two more suited agents walk along the corridor. Klaatu closes his eyes. The agents clamp their hands over their earpieces and all collapse to the floor in agony. Still seated but wearing the suit, Klaatu looks up as the lights flicker and the power fluctuates all over the building. Helen looks up in alarm, then puts on her coat and grabs the sample of Klaatu's fatty outer skin. The alien, now standing, turns to the catatonic polygraph operator sitting in his underwear.
I'm leaving you now.
No.
Klaatu removes the electrodes, and the operator collapses on the table. He strides down the corridor past the agents who are still writhing in agony. Helen, glancing around warily, runs down a corridor full of shadows cast by the flickering lights. Klaatu enters the lift. Clarty walks down a railway line in an industrial area. Flame flares from a stack at a refinery behind him.
Put every arm of the government, military, law enforcement, federal, state, and local, on high alert.
If the media gets word that we've
lost the beat. Use a cover story. We can't risk a panic. Call him an escaped convict. Use every surveillance satellite, every drone aircraft, every freeway camera. Use every resource we've got.
The suited fugitive arrives on a railway station platform. In slow motion, he walks alongside a train, then into the busy station concourse. He walks calmly through the teeming crowds and looks up at the departures board. All the trains are delayed. A guy with a beard jostles through the crowd and snatches a ticket from a man's pocket as he brushes past him. The heavy-set man notices and follows him. Clarty walks up to a snack machine. Watched by a child, he studies the mechanism, then places his hand on the selection panel, and a tuna salad sandwich drops into the collection tray. The little curly-haired lad walks up and stares at Klaatu, who senses the presence, turns, and stares back. He stands as the boy continues to stare before being ushered away by his mother. Klaatu watches the ticket fight and takes a bite of the sandwich. The big man collapses. The thief sees his chance and snatches the ticket back off the prone man. The security guard chases the thief as his colleague attends the fallen man. Klaatu watches.
To criticize the U.S. response to the arrival of the spheres.
Reactions from both national and international religious communities have been varied. While some have responded with hope and measured optimism, most religious communities have considered recent events to be apocalyptic. At gatherings and prayer vigils in virtually every major city, many see the arrival of the Central Park sphere as a sign of a new era, or perhaps even the end of the world.
Klaatu walks into the grubby men's room. Standing in front of the mirror, he pulls back his jacket. There's a patch of blood on his chest seeping through his shirt. He touches the blood, studies his reflection, then touches a finger to the sweat on his brow. He collapses.
Leaders around the world are protesting the U.S.'s decision to deny foreign scientists full access to the being.
Have you done your homework?
School's canceled on account of the aliens. They say it's an invasion.
Well, they're wrong.
What makes you so sure?
I just know. Don't get that!
Hello?
Can I speak to Dr. Helen Benson, please?
It's for you.
With a reprimanding look, she takes the phone.
Hello?
Dr. Helen Benson?
Yes.
I'm calling from Newark, Penn Station. We've got your patient here?
Oh, sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I'm not that kind of a doctor.
Hold on a second. He says you got his medicine.
The family next door are loading their car.
I'll be right there.
Crowds mob the offices of the New Jersey Transport Police. Helen pushes her way through the throng.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, sir. I'm calling. My name's Dr. Benson.
Good. He's over there. It's your problem now. Go ahead, take him. It's your problem.
She moves through the crowd and is concerned to see Klaatu sitting on a bench, his head slumped forward. As she approaches, he looks up into her eyes. Evacuees file through the city past fences topped with barbed wire.
You know, I took a huge risk back at the hospital. Did I make a mistake? Are you a friend to us?
I'm a friend to the Earth.
In the pouring rain, she opens the passenger door of her car, and he gets in. Jacob's sitting in the back. Klaatu turns and looks at the boy.
Hello.
Hi. Now what?
Try it.
She shoots him a mistrustful look and maneuvers her silver car out into the busy street.
Look in your pocket. Your inside pocket.
she pulls out the sample of his fatty birth skin. He opens it, dips his finger in, and rubs some of the substance on the stitched bullet wound on his chest. The wound heals immediately. Helen stares in disbelief. She gapes at him open-mouthed. In the back, Jacob looks puzzled. Klaatu calmly adjusts his tie.
Turn left.
Lost for words, she obeys. Two heavily armed fighter drones hurtle through the clouds towards Manhattan.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. All right, everybody, we got our mission.
All right, target acquired and confirmed, sir. We are locked on.
Madam Secretary, they're sending in the drones.
Bring in the Reapers. We are go.
Roger that. Descending to 1200.
Let's light this thing up.
The drones are remote piloted from the base. They skim between the high-rise city blocks. The pilot's eye view is displayed on a bank of monitors.
I'm your sidewinder missile.
Roger that, Colonel. Sidewinder missiles armed.
The orange light glows in the huge robot's head as the Reapers approach.
He's activating. Fire! Fire! Fire!
Beams of energy shoot out from the robot's eye slit, detonating the missiles.
This is intercepted!
Get out of there! Withdraw and realign for another sortie!
Negative, I've lost Link! I've lost control!
Beams from the robot are locked on the Reavers.
Who's in control of the aircraft, then?
Striker 2-8 headed for orbit perimeter. I am out of control!
The Reapers are sent plunging into two tanks. The robot's light goes out, and the Colonel rips off his headset in frustration.
Anyone got any other ideas?
Traffic clogs the nighttime highway.
Why are people running? We should stay and fight.
They didn't come here to hurt us.
Well, we should kill them anyway, just to make sure.
Don't say that.
That's what Dad would have done.
I think he would have looked for a different way.
He would have fought.
I like to think I knew him pretty well.
I knew him too, longer than you. What do you think?
Of what?
Should people run, or should we stay and fight?
Neither.
What should we do then?
There's nothing you can do. This is it. Pull in here.
As she pulls into a rain-drenched parking lot, an illuminated Golden Arches sign is reflected in the car's windscreen.
McDonald's? Where are you going? Jacob, where are you going?
To the bathroom.
They sit with the windscreen wipers and headlights still on.
Where's the boy's father?
He's dead.
How did he die?
He was in the army.
So the boy wishes his soldier father were here to rescue the world from the aliens.
The boy wishes his father were here for a lot of reasons. Aliens being released to him. He wasn't even that kind of a soldier. He was an engineer. He went over there to build, not to fight.
And his mother?
She died when he was a baby. I married his father, and a year ago he was killed. Why did you come here?
I came to save the Earth.
From what?
He's here.
He gets out of the car and walks towards a taxi from which an elderly Chinese man is emerging, accompanied by a young man holding an umbrella. In the restaurant, the young man brings a cup to the old man. Your tea, grandfather. Thank you. The old man and Klaatu sit facing each other. Helen and his grandson are at another table. She stares at him.
Are you one of them?
One of who?
Never mind.
You've been out of contact for a long time. I had a dangerous assignment. This is hostile territory. I've noticed. I was hoping I could reason with them. I'm afraid they are not a reasonable race. I've been living amongst them for 70 years now. I know them well. And? Any attempt to intercede with them would be futile. They are destructive. And they won't change. Is that your official report? The tragedy is, they know what's going to become of them. They sense it, but they can't seem to do anything about it. Helen looks at the men, then lowers her eyes. It's decided then. I'll begin the process as soon as possible. We should make preparations for our departure.
I'm staying.
You can't stay here.
I can, and I will.
If you stay, you'll die.
I know. This is my home now.
You yourself called them a destructive race.
That's true. But still, there is another side. You see, I love them. This is a very strange thing. I can't find a way to explain it to you. For many years, I cursed my luck for being sent here. Human life is difficult. But as this life is coming to an end, I consider myself lucky to have lived it.
Klaatu studies the old man expressionlessly.
No sudden movements, no aggressive actions, no matter what happens, no gunfire.
Track is in place, sir. Containment panels are in position. We're ready on your order.
On my command. Move the panels into place. 3, 2, 1.
High metal panels are pushed into place, forming a triangular wall around the robot. A lid is dropped in place on top. The colonel grins nervously. Police cars speed down a street at night. Helen is driving towards the Highlands, New Jersey.
911, what's your emergency?
Escaped convict. They showed on the news. I just saw the guy at the gas station.
Can you describe him?
He was in a little car. He was on the belt.
911, what is your emergency?
I just saw that wanted man over by the McDonald's.
Can you give me a description of the car, sir?
A silver four-door with a woman and a kid.
I need 3 units to look for a silver Honda near Ochada Orchard.
One responding. We are patrolling the orchards off I-67.
HB 28, we'll follow up.
This is it. Stop here.
In a wooded area, Klaatu gets out of the car. Jacob stares after him.
Helen, who is this guy?
A friend?
What kind of friend?
Scooch over. He's a work friend.
What's his name?
Klaatu.
Klaatu? What kind of name is that?
It's foreign, I think.
I never heard you talk about him before.
No, I haven't known him for very long. We're just giving him a ride.
Where?
Here?
The forest?
Baffled, he looks out of the window.
Stay here. Wait, lock the door, okay? And don't open it for anyone but me. I'm serious.
Watched by Jacob, she walks off following Klaatu. It's pitch black, and she moves slowly through the darkness. She cowers, covering her head as insects swarm around her. She comes to a pond. The surface of the water begins to bubble, and light shines up from beneath the surface. Hiding behind a tree, she watches as a sphere about 10 feet high rises to the surface of the pond. Light and dark mist swirl within it. Fish and other animals are attracted to it. A frog and a lizard leap into the water, heading towards it. It drifts towards the edge of the pond, and Klaatu approaches it. Light flares beneath his hand and ripples across the surface as he touches it. Choppers circle the sphere in Central Park. Another sphere sits in the middle of a desert. A burst of light shoots across the surface. Desert creatures, scorpions and snakes, make their way towards it. A similar burst of light spreads out across the surface of a sphere in a jungle. A fishing boat sits on a calm sea. Behind it, a vast sphere, similar to the one in New York, breaks the surface. Klaatu stares into the pond sphere. Helen watches from a distance as he concentrates, his hand resting on the sphere's surface. She makes her way back to the car. She gets into the driver's seat and sits looking stunned.
Helen, what's going on?
She stares straight ahead. Video footage shows people milling around a sphere in South America.
We're getting images of these spheres from all over the world. Okavango, Gobi, Baku.
Which of our agencies gathered this intel?
Ma'am, none of them. We pulled these off the internet.
A screen shows a sphere being blasted with a flamethrower, making the surface transparent. Creatures squirm inside.
Is that them?
No. It's us. Those are ordinary cephalopods. Squid, octopus.
Helen and Jacob wait in the car in the woods.
I don't like him. He's weird, and why are we driving him around anyway?
It's complicated.
Does he come home with us?
No.
Well, what if you decide you like him and he wants to move in?
No, it's not like that. God, no. Listen to me. No one is moving in. You don't understand.
Whatever, you wait for him. I'm going home.
Jacob.
She gets out of the car and follows the boy as he heads into the darkness.
Jacob. Jacob. What is the matter with you?
They're bathed in a brilliant light. Both stare in amazement as the sphere from the pool, blazing with white light, rises slowly into the air. A sphere rises over the Great Wall of China, another over the pyramids. From all over the world, glowing spheres head into space, away from Earth's atmosphere.
These spheres now appear to be leaving in the same mysterious manner.
Hopefully this mass exodus will bring an end to the panic and unrest we've been seeing around the world.
Coming in from around the world. Now, the only sphere that doesn't appear to be leaving is a giant sphere in Central Park. I
don't believe... You think we scared them off?
They're not afraid of us.
Klaatu walks in slow motion through the woods, a shadow emerging through the mist.
I need to get back to the city.
After you tell me what's going on.
Did you do that?
Yes.
Jacob, get in the car.
He's one of them.
Please get in the car.
Get in the car.
Glaring at him, Jacob reluctantly obeys.
I need to know what's happening.
This planet is dying. The human race is killing it.
So you've come here to help us?
No, I didn't.
You said you came to save us.
I said I came to save the Earth.
You came to save the Earth. From us. You came to save the Earth. From us.
We can't risk the survival of this planet for the sake of one species.
What are you saying?
If the Earth dies, you die. If you die, the Earth survives. There are only a handful of planets in the cosmos that are capable of supporting complex life.
You can't do this.
This one can't be allowed to perish.
We can change. We could still turn things around.
We've watched, we've waited, and hoped that you would change.
Please.
It's reached the tipping point. We have to act.
Please.
We'll undo the damage you've done and give the Earth a chance to begin again.
Don't do this. Please. We could change. We can change.
The decision is made. The process has begun.
Oh, God.
They're caught in the police car's spotlight as she backs away from him in horror. Klaatu's face appears on the cop's computer. The officer drives up to them.
It won't make any difference, Ellen. Even if they arrest me, even if they kill me, the process will continue.
Both of you, hands on the car right now. Is that a child in the car?
Yes.
This is HP-28. I'm an I-67. I have the FBI suspect in custody, along with one adult female and one child, awaiting instructions.
7L-140, Roger.
Tell the child to get out of the car. Get the kid out of the car! Okay, you two, over there. You? I'm not gonna tell you again. Hands on the car.
Please don't hurt him.
Not gonna hurt him, so long as he...
I wasn't talking to you.
The cop looks shocked.
The pain will only last a moment.
With a touch, he sends Helen's car crashing into the cop, crushing him against his own cruiser. Klaatu then releases Helen's car, and the cop slumps dead to the ground.
You killed him! You killed him! You Jake, killed him!
Jake. Let me finish.
Klaatu scoops some of the fatty flesh from the sample jar. He touches a hand to the police cruiser, activating all its systems. Helen and Jacob stare as he then reaches down with his other hand and touches the alien flesh to the officer's head. Power surges through the man's body. The officer rolls over. He's alive.
He'll be all right.
I don't understand. You're gonna kill us all. But you saved him.
He was an obstacle. I meant him no harm.
You could stop this, couldn't you, if you wanted to?
I tried to reason with you. I tried to speak with your leaders.
Those aren't our leaders. You want to speak to one of our leaders, I'll take you to one. Let me take you.
They stare at one another. Klaatu looks around, hearing the sirens.
Get in the car.
Mike's with the defense secretary.
Maybe they were just collecting specimens from our planet.
It's not our planet. And that's what he said to me in the hospital. An ark.
Excuse me?
It's an ark. So are all the other spheres. They're saving as many species as they can.
If the sphere is an ark, then what comes next is...
the flood.
The robot is floating down a deep concrete-walled shaft. The light in its head slit comes on. Helen's car is parked in the rain. A grandfather clock shows 11:05. Helen leads the way into the house.
Car over here.
All right, let's get you settled.
She leads the way into a study. A plaque reads, Carl Thomas Barnhart, Inventus Vitam Juvat, Excolvise per Artes.
It's a Nobel Prize. He won it for his work in biological altruism. Probably still be in his desk drawer if I hadn't gotten it framed for him. You tired?
Just a little.
Close. But no.
Klaatu walks into the next room, which has books piled everywhere, and approaches a chalkboard covered in figures.
I wouldn't.
He won't mind.
He erases a highly complex formula. Helen turns away, looking worried, and approaches Jacob.
He's one of them. You shouldn't be helping him. We should stop him.
She strokes the boy's hair affectionately.
For just this once, I need you to trust me.
Klaatu writes his own formula on the chalkboard. A grey-haired man watches as he works, then approaches him. He picks up a piece of chalk and also starts to write. Klaatu glances at Carl's work, then moves to another part of the board. Carl pauses to look at his figures as Helen watches them both curiously. Klaatu draws a sweeping arrow across the board, connecting the formulae. Carl continues to write as Klaatu adjusts some of his equations.
Is it possible?
Klaatu stares at the older man, who darts him a sideways glance, then turns to look down at a newspaper bearing the headlines, "Not with a whimper, but a bang," and "Spheres land across the world, armies mobilized."
I have so many questions to ask you.
Klaatu studies him, then turns away from the chalkboard, walks across the room, and looks up at a speaker which the music is playing through.
It's Bob.
It's beautiful.
So we're not so different after all.
I wish that were true.
Lights shine in the dark at Mount Weather Flash Facility, Bluemont, Virginia.
So is it a machine or a living thing?
It's both, or neither.
What do you mean, neither?
It seems to be some sort of silicone-based hybrid. We're calling it GORT, Genetically Organized Robotic Technology.
Now the military and their acronyms.
We've used every diagnostic method available, MRI, thermal imaging, PET scan. It was impervious, so we attempted a robotically assisted exploration using a diamond drill.
Yeah.
The drill bit fractured. It'll take 24 hours to fix it robotically.
The suited agent steps into an operations room, separated from a circular chamber by thick windows. The windows look out onto the vast head and shoulders of Gort. The light in his head is glowing orange and tracks the agent's every move. The agent stares at Gort, then walks slowly forwards. Gort's glowing eye follows him. The agent backs nervously away from the window.
Colonel, we don't have 24 hours. Send somebody in there to fix that drill.
Food and fuel hoarding have led to shortages, which erupted into looting incidents throughout Asia and South America. Many
outbreaks of rioting and unrest in such cities as Guangdong, China, London, and Chicago, due to the shortages of such basic commodities as fuel, food, and drinking water. Many point to the Central Park sphere as an indicator.
Amidst the chaos in the New York, New Jersey areas, local police are looking for an escaped convict whose name is not being released. Authorities believe that he is a significant threat to the public and are asking for any information that could lead to his capture. If you have seen this man, please contact the number on your screen below.
But there must be alternatives. You must have some technology that could solve our problem.
Your problem is not technology. The problem is you. You lack the will to change.
Then help us change.
I cannot change your nature. You treat the world as you treat each other.
But every civilization reaches a crisis point eventually.
Most of them don't make it.
Yours did? How?
Our sun was dying. We had to evolve in order to survive.
So it was only when your world was threatened with destruction that you became what you are now?
Yes.
Well, that's where we are. You say we're on the brink of destruction, and you're right. But it's only on the brink that people find the will to change. Only at the precipice do we evolve. This is our moment. Don't take it from us. We are close to an answer.
Klaatu studies him thoughtfully.
What's wrong?
He walks out of the room through the French windows, out onto a terrace. In the glow of the dawn sky are the lights of three approaching helicopters. Shocked, Helen rushes indoors.
pants on? He can't get caught. What do I do?
Change his mind, not with reason, but with yourself.
She kisses him on the cheek and rushes off. Helen, Clarto, and Jacob leave the house and run for the car through the rain.
It's too late for that.
They abandon the car and run off into the dense surrounding woodland. Clarto leads the way, followed by Helen, trying to keep up and holding Jacob's hand. They run through the woods as fast as they can as the choppers thunder overhead. Jacob breaks away from Helen's grasp.
Jacob!
Trying to help
you
us.
You can kill him. That's what Dad would have done.
You fight me on everything. On everything.
If my dad were here.
But he isn't here. He's gone. Jacob.
A soldier drops down a rope and snatches Helen.
We've extracted the female, returning to base.
As the two remaining choppers hover above, Clarto strides past the stunned Jacob into a clearing.
Got a visual on the male. Yeah, I see him. Yep, got it. Target acquired. Permission to engage. You are clear to engage. You are go to take out the target. Roger that.
Clarto attracts the targeting lasers to the palms of his hands, and as they fire, reverses the energy flow. The pilots clutch their helmets in agony as the choppers go out of control. Smash into each other and plunge to the ground, erupting in a huge fireball. Jacob turns and runs back into the woods. Clarto follows at a leisurely pace. The boy comes to a narrow wooden bridge over a river. Terrified, he steps onto the wet planks. There's no handrail.
Please don't hurt me!
As he backs away from the advancing alien, a rotten board breaks under him. Clarto reaches out and stops him from falling.
Thanks.
Frowning, Clarto studies the lad.
I don't know where we are.
He looks hopefully up at Clarto.
Can you help me get home?
They stare at one another.
This way.
He strides off. Jacob hesitates, then follows him. An operative in a protective suit gets into the chamber with Gort to repair the drill mechanism. The agent and the ops room staff watch through the window. The chipped drill bit is removed and replaced with a new one. Deep in the minute cracks of the damaged drill, tiny black bugs flutter and multiply by dividing in two.
He's come here to exterminate us, hasn't he?
You can't stop him. The only chance we have is if he changes his mind. You have to let me talk to him.
What makes you think he'll listen to you?
I don't know that he will. But I think he trusts me. And I don't think he wants to do this.
We have the situation under control.
Madam Secretary, General Quinn needs to see you in the briefing room. He says it's urgent.
You're not in control. You don't know what he's capable of!
But she didn't do anything wrong, so they should let her go, right?
You're afraid you're going to be left alone?
I already am alone. Helen's just someone that was stuck with me when my dad died, you know?
Clarto glances at him.
Oh, I forgot. You're an alien. You don't understand anything.
In the chamber, the operative tightens up the new drill bit.
We're good to go.
He's about to leave when he notices the old drill bit. It's being eaten away. He drops it and hurriedly makes to leave the chamber.
Hold it. Your sleeve.
Let me out.
Open the airlock.
No.
Open the door.
Then we have to flash our protocol.
I decide what protocol is.
Open the door. Let me out. Let me out.
Reset the drill.
Open it.
I said reset the drill.
Let me out. Let me out. Open the door. Let me out.
The man's suit, air canister, and body are being eaten away.
Sir, the restraints.
The massive steel bands holding Gort are also being eaten away. As the agent watches, the window glass is attacked. He backs away from the window and hits a button marked flash. A massive jet of flame roars up the chamber. The operations room staff squint in the intense glare. Flame and smoke clear, but Gort remains, his eyes still glowing. The agent stares in fear as Gort raises his massive hands to show he's free. Gort dissolves, becoming a cloud of bugs which fills the flash chamber. The agent bolts for the door, but his pass won't work.
Open the door! Open the door!
This facility has been sealed. No one leaves.
The officer in charge watches grimly as the swirling cloud attacks the windows. Others start to panic. The cloud flows into the ops room. A huge array of men and vehicles has assembled nearby.
We've lost contact with the flash chamber, sir.
Vast pressure is straining the massive steel doors of the facility. They burst open, and one is hurled high in the air.
Risk it, Task Force! AJ!
The soldiers let fly at the cloud with all the firepower at their disposal, but it rolls inexorably down the hillside towards them. Men start to run as the cloud reaches them.
Were there any survivors?
No. As you know, it's 05, 24 hours. Our pilots launched a salvo of Sidewinder air-to-air missiles into the heart of the mass.
And?
Every strike made it larger.
And this mass, where is it heading?
Everywhere.
The defense secretary stares at the officer, then lowers her eyes in resignation. A truck rumbles down a desert highway towards the smoking chimneys of an industrial complex.
Spears leaving USA.
The driver fiddles with the radio, looks puzzled, then switches on his windscreen wipers. The cloud envelops the truck. Starting at the back, the truck is eaten to dust by the voracious mass, which flies on once nothing remains. A road sign disintegrates, chewed to nothing. Helen sits head bowed in a sparsely furnished room.
Dr. Benson.
Madam Secretary, please. I don't want to die here in this room without seeing my son one more time.
Do you really think you can persuade him?
I think you should let me try.
Go on then. But I make you no promises. I still answer to the president. You're on your own.
No, she's not. I'll go with you.
Helen looks affectionately at Mike.
Good luck.
Thank you.
She gathers up her belongings, including her phone, and checks her watch. It's 10 past 10. In the woods near a high bridge, Jacob and Klaatu find an old ranger hut. They force open the door, and Jacob tries the phone.
It doesn't work.
Klaatu unplugs the receiver, touches his finger to the end of the cord, plugs it back in, and hands the phone to Jacob.
Go ahead.
The lad reaches up to dial on the wall-mounted phone as Klaatu looks around the room.
It's me. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
He's right here. She wants to talk to you.
Yes. I need to get back to the city. Yes.
Tell her I know where we can meet her.
A pickup drives down a forest road. Jacob and Klaatu are sitting in the open back of the pickup.
I told Helen we should kill you.
Yes, I heard that.
I didn't mean it, though.
You didn't?
Well, not anymore.
He looks earnestly at Klaatu, who considers him without emotion.
So what's going to happen to us?
I was just wondering the same thing.
He looks thoughtfully at Jacob. An iron gate is topped with ornate spikes.
Woo-hoo! End of the world!
Good luck! This is it! This is where we're supposed to meet her! Come on!
Jacob climbs over a low wall, also topped with iron railings. Klaatu follows. The alien follows the boy into a cemetery filled with rows of white headstones. Klaatu looks down at the inscriptions. Jacob kicks leaves away from one of the graves and dusts off the headstone with his glove. Klaatu looks at him and at the stone marked Andrew Benson, Lieutenant, USACE Operation.
You can do this. Just like with the trooper.
There are some things I can't do.
But you have powers.
I'm sorry.
Jacob looks pleadingly at him.
Please. Please.
Jacob, nothing ever truly dies. The universe wastes nothing. Everything is simply transformed.
Just leave me alone.
Klaatu studies him, then walks away. Jacob kneels down dejectedly in front of his father's grave. As he kneels, crying, Helen rushes up to him, kneels down, puts her arms around him, and hugs him tightly.
It's not fair.
No. No, it isn't fair.
He left me alone.
Oh, baby. You're not alone. And he didn't leave you.
I see him in you. All the time. All the time. Sometimes it's hard for me to bear.
You miss him too?
So much. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
They put their arms around each other and hold each other tightly. Klaatu watches them intently. Remaining expressionless, Klaatu walks towards them. Wind blows the leaves as he approaches. Mike arrives in his SUV.
It's all right. He's here to help.
There's another side to you. I feel it now.
She looks imploringly at him, her eyes filled with tears. The swarm darkens the sky behind Klaatu.
Is that how it ends?
Yes.
You can't stop it?
I don't know. It would come at a price to you and your way of life.
But we could change. You know that now. Please. Please, just give us a chance.
I'll try. I must get back to the city.
The swarm approaches a sports stadium, which crumbles to dust as the cloud engulfs it. The mass, now a vast, swirling gray sea, is heading for New York.
Of course, Mr. President, I understand the situation. But with all due respect, sir, any further military action will only make things worse. I believe we may still be able to open a dialogue.
The secretary raises a hand to her mouth, stifling her emotion.
Yes, Mr. President. As you wish, sir. Thank you.
The screen shows the mass spreading out across the eastern seaboard of the United States. New York City is completely deserted. The lights and advertisements of Times Square have no one to see them. Mike's SUV drives down the empty streets. Mike is driving, with Klaatu in the passenger seat. In the back, Helen and Jacob look anxiously at each other.
Checkpoint.
We can't stop, there isn't time.
Mike glances at him, then puts his foot down. They hurtle towards the military roadblock. Soldiers dive out of the way.
Lincoln Bravo 1 to Lincoln Bravo 2. A black SUV crashed our checkpoint with the suspects en route to your position.
Roger that, Bravo 1.
They're pursued by Hummers with machine guns. Mike looks tense and Helen looks nervously out of the back window. Klaatu seems calm.
Bravo 1, we've got orders to let him through. Do you copy?
Roger that.
The pursuers fall back.
They're slowing down.
They're letting us through.
Why?
They turn into leafy, wooded Central Park, pull off a path, and drive across the grass towards the sphere.
Where is everybody?
They've cleared the area. Stop the car.
What?
Stop the car!
An explosion lifts the car up, rolling it over several times before it comes to rest against a tree. Fighters streak overhead as the sphere is engulfed in a great fireball. Regina watches the attack on a monitor. She closes her eyes in relief. But as the smoke clears, the sphere is completely intact. The swarm reaches the edge of Manhattan. In the car, Mike is dead, and Jacob's out cold. She frantically undoes her seatbelt, looks at Michael, then notices the windscreen is being eaten.
We have to get to the sphere.
Klaatu hauls himself out of the car, then lifts out Jacob.
Helen!
Helen emerges and looks up to see the swarm swirling around the sphere. More grey clouds of bugs arrive, darkening the skies.
We won't make it!
He looks around, then grabbing Jacob's hand, he leads them in a sprint across the grass, just ahead of the edge of the deadly cloud. They run into a tunnel. The swarm stays outside.
I can't keep them out for long.
He frowns, thinking hard. Jacob's nose is bleeding. As Helen crouches to examine him, he collapses in her arms.
What's happening to him? Jacob.
They're inside. He's dying.
Help him.
She wipes her nose. There's blood on her finger.
Help him. Please.
She looks at him pleadingly. Klaatu gently takes Jacob and Helen's hands in his.
Please.
He closes his eyes, concentrating. Bugs start to run up his wrists. They're coming out through Helen and Jacob's skin and burrowing bloodily into Klaatu. Jacob wakes up. Klaatu opens his eyes and looks at the pair.
Your professor was right. At the precipice, we change.
Helen stares at him wide-eyed. He stands up and walks towards the mouth of the tunnel. He looks round at Helen comforting Jacob. She stares back at him. Klaatu steps out into the raging swarm. He walks slowly through the swirling grey cloud, hand raised, vainly trying to protect his face and head. Holes appear in his suit. His hands and face are bloody. And as he approaches the sphere, slowly, he sinks to his knees. With a final effort, he stands, reaches up, and touches the sphere. Light blazes as he is absorbed into it. The sphere emits a booming pulse of energy, and the swarm's millions of bugs begin to fall like rain to the ground. Screens at the control center where Regina is sitting alone flicker, then go off as the power fails. The lights go out in Tokyo. San Francisco goes dark. Lights on a bridge and car headlights all go out. Satellite dishes in the desert power down, and the lights go out at an oil refinery. A train near the base of snow-capped Mount Fuji comes to a halt, and oil wells come to a standstill. The dead swarm continues to rain down on the half-destroyed buildings of Manhattan, and traffic has stopped in Parliament Square in London. People look bewildered. The sun sets behind the Sydney Opera House and Harbour Bridge. Ships sit motionless at a busy commercial port. A car production line is silent. The blinds are opened at the military base, and Regina looks out at the sun and the aircraft parked on the tarmac. She looks down and taps her watch, which has stopped at 8:30. In Central Park, Helen and Jacob emerge from the tunnel and walk towards the sphere, across the grey carpet of dead bugs. They watch as the sphere rotates, intense light filtering out through the swirling mists within.
It's leaving.
Other as the sphere glows powerfully and slowly rises into the air. Throwing out beams of light, it rises up through the clouds and away. Jacob puts his arm around his stepmother and she strokes his hair. The sphere heads out into space, leaving the Earth behind. Unit production managers Gregory Goodwin, Barbara Kelly, and Warren Carr. First Assistant Director Pete White. Second Assistant Director Cindy Smith, Paula Case, Matthew D. Smith. With Keanu Reeves as Klaatu, Jennifer Connelly as Helen Benson, Kathy Bates as Regina Jackson, Jaden Smith as Jacob Benson, John Cleese as Professor Barnhart, John Hamm as Michael Granier. Kyle Chandler as John Driscoll, Robert Knepper as Colonel, James Hong as Mr. Wu, John Rothman as Dr. Myron, Sunita Prasad as Ruhani, Juan Riedinger as William Kwan, Sam Gilroy as Tom, Tonya Chompu as Isabel, Rukia Bernard as Student, Alison Down as Laptop Woman, David Lewis as Plainclothes Agent, Lloyd Adams as Agent Driver, Musa Kreisch as Youssef, J.C. McKenzie as Grossman, Kurt Max Rundt as Civil Engineer, Daniel Bacon as Winslow, Richard Keats as Helicopter Scientist No. 1, Bill Mondy as Helicopter Scientist No. 2, Judith Maxey as Helicopter Scientist No. 3, Rhys Alexander as Sergeant, Serge Hood as Scientist No. 1, Marina Gale as Scientist No. 2, Stephanie Samuels as Guardswoman, Richard Tillman as Army Sergeant, Camille Atibi as NYPD No. 1, Thomas Bradshaw as NYPD No. 2, Terence Dammond as NYPD No. 3, Patrick Sabongui as Soldier No. 1, Jacob Blair as Soldier No. 2, Shane Jones as Soldier No. 3, Jake McLaughlin as Soldier, George Sharperson as Cop, Shaker Palaja as Medic No. 1, Doug Chapman as Medic No. 2, Marcy T. House as Medic No. 3, Aaron Craven as Technician, Roger Cross as General Quinn, Heather Dorkson as Regina's Aide, Hiro Kanagawa as Dr. Ikegawa, Craig Stangetta as Grey Man, Stefan Buss as Grey Man, Dean Redman as Military Policeman, David Richmond Peck as Polygraph Operator, Andrew Wheeler as Guardsman, Darian Provost as Little Boy, Daniel St. Andrews as Train Passenger No. 1, Brad Dryber as Train Passenger No. 2, Ken Kersinger as Arguing Evacuee, William Big Sleep Stewart as Transit Cop, Blair Redford as Army Fighter Pilot No. 1, Daniel Whistler as Army Fighter Pilot No. 2, Mark Cogan as Air Traffic Controller, Brandon T. Jackson as Target Tech, Edward Fong as Wu's Grandson, Sandra Colton as Army Corps Engineer Captain, Ty Olson as Flash Chamber Colonel, J. Nicholas Hackleman as State Trooper, Dawn Chubai as News Anchor, Joshua Close as Flash Chamber Engineer, Leanna Darchi as Flash Chamber Tech, Jeff Mead as Field Commander Communications Officer, Michael Hogan as General, Ben Cotton as Truck Driver, Kevin Case as Pickup Truck Driver, Jennifer Patterson as Girlfriend, Yosue Aguirre as Humvee Soldier. Copyright 2008, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and Jewel Entertainment 3 LLC in all territories except Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea and Spain. Copyright 2008, TCF Hungary Film Rights Exploitation Limited Liability Company, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and June Entertainment 3 LLC in Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea and Spain. 20th Century Fox Film Corporation is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. The events, characters and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead or to actual events or firms is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Further titles continue to scroll. Description by Deluxe. Written and voiced by Roland Bean. The end.